Thank you, Mr. Oliver. Hoosier. Hope everyone's doing well. Hope you guys are having a great Sabbath. I'd like to extend a welcome to all those on the Cybercast. I'm trying to straighten my notes. Do you consider yourself a peacemaker? That's my question for you this morning, or this afternoon. In your interactions with people at work, or school, family, friends, especially in your marriages, do you make a point to pursue peace whenever you can? Or do you just act the way you act, and, you know, who cares what the consequences are? You know, I live my life, get out of my way, you know, that type of attitude. Well, looking at the state of our country and our society around over the past few years, I fear many around us have taken on this attitude. And it's made us seem perceived to make this country more divided than ever. And I think we especially saw that the past couple of years, especially in the political arena. And, you know, I'm not the only one that has thought this. A recent Gallup survey was done, and it showed that a record high of 77% of Americans perceive that this nation is divided. And it makes me think about how now, more than ever, being a peacemaker is such a crucial function that we need to fulfill as Christians. Now, this instruction to be a peacemaker comes from Christ himself. We see it in Matthew 5, verse 9. I'm just going to read it to you. It's a very familiar verse. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. If we are striving to live God's way of life and become his children, this is an attribute that we must practice daily. But in this world, it can seem like an uphill battle. This world, society seems to incentivize conflict. We love it. We love scandal, turmoil. It's the stuff that goes viral on Twitter. It's what gets you noticed. It gets what reported on the news. It's almost become entertainment for people these days. So where do we begin on this uphill battle? How do we follow Christ's instructions? So how do we pursue peace? How do we pursue peace with others? Especially thinking in your life, those difficult people in our lives. And we all have at least one. the one, you know, the coworker that just always makes your life a little harder than it has to be. The people that get offended easily, who lose their perspective, people who have a short temper, get angry, who make mountains out of molehills. You know, how do we pursue peace with those people? Because there can be sometimes a lot of them in our lives. And there's many aspects I could probably approach this from. There's many nuggets of wisdom that you can see in the Bible that give, you know, particular advice on different situations. But for the rest of my message, I'm just going to focus on two fundamental underlying principles to follow, which can really help guide the decision-making process in our lives. So, two fundamental underlying principles on being a Christian peacemaker. These are principles that if we follow, you know, I think they'll help bring peace in our lives as well as help us share the peace in others. So two principles. Let's just dive into them. Principle number one. When it comes to our temporary pursuits and existence in this life, in this world, we need to be okay with sacrificing our wants and desires when needed in order to pursue peace in the short term. Because in the end, with people, it's the relationship that matters most. I know that's a wordy statement. And what I mean by that is, as Christians, we're told to be the ones to sacrifice for others. We're told to show love. You know, Christ has so many examples of teachings of this. You know, we can see in Matthew 5:38 where he lists all these things, you know, that are said in the Old Testament, and he expounds upon it. You know, that's where we get the whole turn the other cheek from, and whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with them two. You know, don't be afraid to go that extra mile for other people, especially for those who are your enemies. And so this concept of sacrifice is a fundamental principle of Christianity, and it's especially important if we are to become peacemakers. Because to have peace, we can't all be stubborn. We can't all be to the point where we're not going to give an inch. You know, we have to be the ones to step back and let things go, you know? Let the other person take the parking spot. It's not that big of a deal. You know, sure, you might have to walk a mile, but it can be those little things in life, but also the big things. So principle one, you know, when it comes to the things in this world that really don't matter, we should be okay with letting them go in order to maintain peace with our relationships, with our friends, with our family, and our marriages. So that's the first principle. Principle two. On the other side of that coin, when it comes to our eternal pursuits for God's kingdom, living God's way of life, we should never, ever sacrifice God's way for the sake of peace. For God's way is the only way for peace in the long term. Now, hearing these two principles, they seem like they might contradict each other in some ways. Let me expound on that some more. What I'm basically saying is that peace with God is most important over everything. And we should never sacrifice that. We should never sacrifice peace with God for anyone. You know, Christian peacemaking has this weird dichotomy. And, you know, it teaches us that we got to live a life of peace, but at the same time, that life that we're living inherently can bring conflict. You know, when you go to your employer and with the Sabbath and saying, hey, I can't work this day, that might bring some conflict in your life temporarily. But in the end, following God's way of life is always the way of long-term peace. There's a hierarchy involved, you know, God before men. That seems to be pretty simple and clear, and we know that intuitively. And in the end, we can do everything right, but peace can still escape situations. And that's not our fault in the end. We can just do our best. You know, Paul says it really well. You can turn there if you want. It's just a quick verse. So Romans 12, verse 18. If it is possible, as much as it depends on you, live peaceably with all men. So do everything on your end of it. But if they don't want peace, you know, that's on them. You gotta be okay with that. And Jesus, he was very aware of this sort of dichotomy in this principle. Because in Luke 12, 51, he said, do you suppose I came to give peace on earth? I tell you, not at all, but rather division. I mean, he knew this way of life can cause conflict. This is the same Jesus who people think is this docile, gentle man. But he was the one that would run out money changers from the temple, who created a court to whip people out. He would go after the Pharisees with such a sharp tongue. You know, he was perfectly fine with giving up short-term peace with men in order to help people understand that eternal peace can only come from a proper relationship with God in the end. So let's keep these two principles in mind. We're going to look at one example to showcase how these principles can come to play in good examples and bad examples of people doing them. The example I want to look at is of Isaac in the Old Testament, in Genesis. Genesis chapter 26. Let's turn there. Genesis chapter 26. Let's just start in verse 1. So there was a famine in the land. Beside the first famine, that was in the days of Abraham, and Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, and Gerar. And I'm going to summarize a couple other verses. Verse 2 through 5, it's where God speaks to Isaac, talking about how he's going to continue the covenant that he first made with Abraham and extend the blessings as long as he keeps his statutes, his commandments, and his laws. It's an excellent example to showcase how the law existed before Moses, but that's a different subject. Verse 6 now. So Isaac dwelt in Gerar. When the men of that place asked him about his wife, he said, she is my sister. Because he was afraid to say, she is my wife. Whoa. What is he doing there? He just flat out lied. He's doing the same mistake that his dad did, Abraham did. Abraham made that mistake twice. Apparently didn't teach that lesson to his son. At least with Abraham, that was like a half-truth. I think Sarah was a half-sister. But correct me if I'm wrong, I think Rebecca is at most as a cousin. So that's a flat-out lie. For what? Let's continue reading. He thought the men of this place might kill me on account of Rebekah because she is beautiful. So in his mind, there might have been different motivations in his mind, but from my perspective, it seemed like he didn't want to ruffle any feathers. He was coming into town. You know, she's my sister. He didn't want to get in trouble. He thought maybe he would get killed or other people. So in his mind, he was trying to create peace by lying, which can get us in trouble. Sacrificing God's way for peace is never the right approach. And that was that second principle that I mentioned. So let's look at the consequences. Verse 8, when Isaac had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked down from a window and saw Isaac caressing his wife Rebekah. So Abimelech summoned Isaac and said, "She is really your wife. Why did you say she is my sister?" So it was obvious that they were more than sisters. Isaac answered him, "Because I thought I might lose my life on account of her." Then, this is verse 10, Abimelech said, "What is this you have done to us? What if one of the men might have slept with your wife and you would have brought guilt upon us?" You know, it's fortunate that nothing happened, but if something did, that would have brought on a lot more conflict in the end. With the examples of Abraham, I remember, I think, was it with Pharaoh? You know, curses were brought, God brought curses on to the men that were involved. And so things could have gotten a lot worse. But luckily for Isaac, nothing happened. So in the end, it turned out okay for him. So verse 11, so Abimelech gave orders to all the people, "Anyone who harms this man or his wife shall surely be put to death." So things worked out okay for him. But he made that mistake of wanting to seek peace with men first rather than doing what's right. Let's look at another example, though, in the same chapter of him doing the right thing. We're going to skip down to verse 16 now. So then Abimelech said to Isaac, "Move away from us. You have become too powerful for us." For in this time, Isaac has been blessed. You know, his cattle, his flocks have grown. He was incredibly blessed, had a large multitude of servants and people, a large caravan with him. So he was pretty powerful. Verse 17. So Isaac moved away from there and encamped in the valley of Gerar, where he settled. Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in that time of his father, Abraham, and the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham died, and he gave him the same names his father had given them. And verse 19, Isaac's servants dug in the valley and discovered a well of fresh water there. So they opened up their old wells, and now they're opening up some new ones. But the herders of Gerar quarreled with those of Isaac and said, "The water is ours." Let's think about that. You know, they're the ones that put the work in digging that well. Seems like it should be Isaac's well. If he really wanted to, Isaac could have put his foot down. He was pretty powerful and probably could have defended those wells, fought people off. But let's see what he did. Verse 21, I believe. Well, first he named that well Esek because they disputed him over the well. Verse 21, then they dug another well, but they quarreled over that one also. So he named it Sidna. Verse 22, he moved on from there and dug another well, and no one quarreled over it. So what he did, he was just like, okay, it's just a well. I already have some. Take this well. I'm just going to move over here. He pursued peace with those men. Even though he had every claim to those wells, he just dropped his pride, just because pride can really get in our way, and just said, take the wells. And in this part of the country, I was thinking just like, how important is water to be able to do that? It just makes the things that we deal with pretty frivolous in many cases. So he just moved on till he could find a place that was peaceful. And he called it, verse 22, so I think I read this already, he dug a well, and no one quarreled over it, and he named it Reboeth, saying, "Now the Lord has given us room, and we will flourish in the land." So let's sort of recap some of the things we've talked about. So these two principles, we've seen an example of Isaac. When you do them correctly, blessings, our life can be blessed. And he messed up at the beginning, but then I think he made up for it some towards the end by pursuing peace with the men of that land. Think about it for a second of ways in your life that you can maybe pursue peace with others around you or do a better job of pursuing peace with those difficult people that I mentioned earlier. You know, at work, is there something you can maybe sacrifice to help the situation? Or especially online and with the stuff people post online, it's so easy to get upset about things. To think about how we can apply these principles over people's tweets. A lot of times it's better to just let go and just walk away. So I just want you to think about these principles and how you can really apply them in your life and with our goal of pursuing peace with others. So remember, peace with God is more important than any peace with men. Never sacrifice God's way of life to pursue a temporary, short-term peace with men. Do what we can, you know, pursue it, but be willing to sacrifice the non-essential things in life that just don't matter, the temporary things of our existence, to pursue it. That's okay. Those things don't matter in the end. But know in the end, it's not always possible, and we have to be okay with that. If we do this, it will help us have peace in our lives as well as peace in others. So, as this world continues spiraling down into a festering stew of strife and division, let's keep our spirits up. Let's be positive and try to pursue peace at every chance we get, because remember, blessed are the peacemakers, for they should be called sons of God.